Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And today, welcome Kimberly Smythe, author of Letting Go Again, which shares her reunion with her daughter, Kelsey, and the trauma of giving up her child and the emotionally fraught efforts to reconnect once they were reunited. Hello, Kimberly, and thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much, Cheryl, for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, Kimberly, as you and guests of Healing From Within are aware, each show offers ways to understand our reasons for having a life, for finding love, and how we may move past challenging emotional and physical situations to find ultimately peace, healing, and a greater awareness of ourselves, because we're always looking past blame and lower emotions to find personal growth, develop loving intentions, and find a way to improve our life. And this means we have to let go, accept, allow, and often surrender to our destiny and life plan, which, no matter how hard, helps us evolve into more beautiful beings. In today's episode of Healing From Within, we will experience Kimberly's reunion after 18 years of separation from her daughter, Kelsey, and witness the tender subject matter of adoption, loss, abandonment, sorrow, and also discuss the stigma society often attaches to the birth mother. Reunions and warm and fuzzy feelings like those that may be seen on shows like Oprah, adoption reunions may often end in tears and long-buried fears and sorrow which need to be addressed once the past is confronted. And that goes for every issue in our life, not only in regard to adoptions. We will raise important questions about motherhood, the effects of adoption, and our definition of family. Kimberly, I often ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember an experience or event or person in their life that may have offered them a glimpse into their future and the destiny that would naturally unfold for them later on, as I feel the journey of the soul begins early on, and we are simply gathering the experiences for our souls to mature and grow in love and empathy. So think back for a moment to your childhood. You write about it in the book most beautifully.
gosh, one person.
That's well, it doesn't toughie. Have to be a person. Yeah. It could just be how you felt when were younger in your family and your beginning experiences and what you observed around you.
Sure. So I was from a large family. I was a right smack dab in the middle, kind of the middle child. Happy family, military family, Catholic family, a lot of rules, a lot of sharp angles, I would think, you know, not too many soft curves, except for my mom, of course. But I think I felt, and I've talked to my siblings about this, it was kind of the old lectures at the dinner table kind of feeling. We all felt loved, but it was always...
It was always about being perfect.
It was how do I do this correctly to make it through? You know, the whole safety issue of a child. We want to make sure we get it right? So,
we actually want to please our parents and teachers because we want to experience love. And we think the only way to do that is to follow their values. But, you know, children have a deep sense within them and wisdom and awareness of what's good for them. And we'd all probably do a lot better in environments where there were less rules and allowing people to just resonate in joy and happiness and peace and calmness. And I think good parents nowadays are trying to gather a little of that, even though it's not easy because they're repeating the patterns of their childhood.
And then there's always overcorrections too, the other way, right? I mean, to find parenting is a tricky little game,
Oh, yes, it is.
and what you thought you wanted as a child, right, could totally backfire with one child, but work really nicely with another child. So it's a definite challenging role to take on. I totally. I see where you're coming from, and I, you know, the old children are to be seen, not heard, was
Yes.
kind of how I felt. A lot of not having a voice, and I've struggled with that my whole life. So it's kind of interesting that here I am speaking.
Well, because it's still going on. I mean,
Yeah,
there are
and the only
people
way
who
you
are,
get through it is to go through it, right?
we want to illuminate this because there are better ways to help our children develop. There are better ways to teach and parent. There are better ways to live. Now, you use the word outsider, and many people who are uniquely different because they have a sense of a spiritual nature, they're not as involved in the physical world, perhaps, but they're digging deeper within them to find out more who they are. They're just being told they're this and that, but they have a sense of something more. And I have found many people like that do use that word outsider. So tell us something about your life in Hawaii and the pattern that you started to see that you wanted to break, that you wanted to get away from.
Trying to fit in a place like Hawaii would sound really easy because it's so laid back, but it was actually very difficult for me because we weren't living on base. We were living outside of the military, and what I found was as fascinating and as beautiful and as different as Hawaii was in 19. We moved there in 1972. It was very difficult for me to even figure out how the game was played because I was in a school that was overcrowded. It was very chaotic. It was full of fights and all the, and I think I say in the book it was kind of an inner city ghetto school set in paradise, and that's how I felt there. And I was always trying to figure out how to come out alive in my life, or just how to figure out how to be in with this group and then in with this group. And then here I am surrounded by people from all different countries and nationalities, and it was fascinating and it was fun for me in one regard, but it was the rules were all so different that I just had a tough time figuring out how to go through the act of surviving in that.
You know what, Kimberly, it sounds like the world we're living in now. It sounds like we're all looking for a way to bring this diversity back into unity and this separation back into oneness. And we're all trying to figure out a way to live and make our world a better place because there's so much chaos going on, not just in one location or school or for one family, but for everybody. So this book has a lot of input, your book has a lot of input about the feelings that many of us have felt in childhood and in adulthood and in our experiences and what we're really looking for. Now, let's go on to, you use the term natural mother as opposed to birth mother, and you talk about what you had to experience in the summer of 1977 when you had to give up your first daughter for adoption. Tell us something about what happened, how that happened, and the terms natural mother as opposed to birth mother.
I think my mindset when it became seriously obvious that I was, going to have a child after denying that fact for probably 3 or 4 months, and how I dealt with it, was I really loved the father, and to me, it sounds like an after-school special, but this was my frame of reference. I was the girl that got in trouble, and I didn't want my boyfriend to have to, I didn't want to ruin his life. That's how I thought of it. And so I also didn't want my parents to be the parents of the girl that got in trouble, so I made a big old mistake and lie about how I became pregnant. In my estimation, to protect myself, my parents, my boyfriend, and most especially my daughter from the reality of who her mother was, because I really felt very badly about myself, right? So,
Yes, yeah. And that's very sad because what you did was just love someone and you tried to take on the whole responsibility yourself to avoid the next step. You practically made the decision out of knowing what was best for everybody. You were really looking for the common good for everybody in the situation that you made, the choice that you made.
And it took me a really, really long time to get back to that understanding. And that's really interesting that you so sweetly said that, because it's the truth. And
Well, I can remember when I was 16 or 17, and I can re remember how afraid I was of the changes going on personally as a young woman, very young woman, and what was expected of me, and the fears that our families had for us, and the way marriage was seen then, which is so different than now. And so there was a lot you were dealing with. But I want to read something that you wrote. You wrote this: "I was a miserable mess who justified her actions by casting herself in the role of martyr. There were times when I would reflect on my actions and I would ask myself, who is this mean-spirited person? But then I'd wrap my misery and pain around me and soldier on, keeping my distance from others, shutting people out, and maintaining my cloak of separation, lest anyone discover my secret. No one could see that I was dying inside, and I only had myself to blame. I didn't plan what happened next. I only knew that I had to act, to do something. Lost in a place so dark that I couldn't reach myself, I stood in my bathroom, staring at but not seeing the image in the mirror. I was looking past me at somebody I didn't know." Now that's youth. That is you as a young person, and your artful and emotionally packed writing conveyed the angst and confusion of teenage years and all our earlier relationships, full of love and beauty and fear and unexpected outcomes. And I return to my own reading that, I return to my own experience and mixed signals. There were many mixed signals to given to us at that time of our life. So now take us fast forward from that time about now you have four grown children. Tell us something about moving past that and coming into who you are now and what's your family life and what your values are now about family.
I think that was one of the biggest trials for me to get through. This was one of the best things I've ever done in my life, was become a mother to my children, all of them, right? And
Yes.
to know that I took home three and had to tell the world another story about my first child was so incongruent to who I wanted to show the world, that to go through that process of looking at people and saying, yeah, well, this is my story, and for them to look at me and say, wow, I had no idea, and to go through that awkward, because it's awkward being a birth mother and to tell people, and it's not something. I used to kind of be taken aback by it, but what I've learned is that because there are not a lot of birth mothers that are speaking about it, this is kind of shocking. There's millions of us out there, and there are very few of us who want to
Well,
claim the story as ours. It's a
yes.
part that we just want to let go and put it into a little pocket somewhere and forget, try to forget it's there, but it's still
But it's
there.
such an important story because
And what's been so magical for me is the outpouring of, I've got to tell you my story now. The outpouring of, my mom was adopted, my sister-in-law has adoptive children. All the people that seem to really want to have me listen to their story, and it's been so magical, and
And
it's been,
therapeutic and
and it
healing.
has, and for everybody involved, even my family and my daughter's natural father's family, reading my story has been an allowing of conversation that was not there before, and it's just given me so much solace and so much knowing that this needs to be talked about. It needs to be something that, I mean, the hard things sometimes are hard, but there's so much reward when you go through them, and really,
Well, we don't grow and evolve from easy things. I am an intuitive healer or a medium, whatever you wish to call it. And one day I did a reading for a man who had lost his son. He had three children, and he had lost his 19-year-old son. And at the end of the reading, I said, you know, a birthday's coming up for this son, and you're to have a cake and celebrate with him. He says, but he's not here, and I only have two children now. And I said, no, you have three children. Two are here in the physical world, and one is above, but still part of the interaction. So wherever your children are, if they're adopted or if you've given up a child, they're still a part of you. We're all interconnected by energy and our life stories and love. And nothing is ever lost. It's only gained through accepting the wisdom of this. And I said to that man, have a birthday cake and celebrate your birthday, your son's birthday. He will be around you in a sense, in a way, you know. And I just felt when you said that you had four children. Yeah. So one wasn't with you for a little while, but they were still there in your heart. She was there in your heart, and she was with you in love. And nobody ever has to lose that. Now, tell us how many people feel about a mother giving up a child and how that influences many young women who are already so traumatized by the pregnancy and the decision to give up their child. What is the stigma society attaches to the birth mother? Tell us something about that.
All I can do is tell you what I have witnessed and see in our society. I think Western society is a very difficult society for women to find a voice in a lot of ways, especially, when I was younger. But all I know is that depictions of birth mothers, usually in Hollywood, are, the crack addicts or people that can't stand on their own, or they're
Or very young teenagers. Yeah.
and I don't know, there's a tendency to think that they're very flawed people, and I think we're all kind of I mean, when you have a child young, who is really that prepared for being a parent,
Well, let me
which is.
just say something about you. You used the word flawed. There is nobody on this planet, in my estimation. I am an intuitive healer who is not damaged in some way, and we're here to find healing and truth and know more about who we are as both spiritual and physical beings. So, in other words, we're all flawed. It's just a matter of going past that to find the beauty and love that we also are. There's the darkness and the light, so to put it. So, as a result of all the events that you have experienced and leading up to the reunion and seeing your child now as an 18-year-old young woman, what would you say is the true nature of love?
Oh, love is without end. I think love is takes on it's the fifth element of life. It is beyond, it is what we all are. We all are love. We are just playing out this game of whatever we want to play and learn, like you're talking about. I think getting a grip on that. I mean, I have a good friend who lost her child at 19, and her 10-year anniversary is coming up, and I think I know her loss more than most of the people that she knows, because not many people she knows have lost their child, and I don't think there's anything more challenging is to get through something as painful as that. And you know, I think there's a lot of parents that don't have close relationships with their children, and my relationship with my daughter hasn't turned out to this point as I had hoped it would. But I'm not alone in that, and I'm not alone in a lot of the struggles that, like I was telling you, when I tell my story, I see the struggles in different variations, you know. There's so many ways. There's abortions. There's all different things that women have had to go through in their lives, miscarriages. There's so many, like I said, variations of my story.
Of pain. There's so many variations of pain and sorrow and suffering. And I want to say, in regard to healing or love, I really believe it can only be found within your own heart or energetic force and a connection to higher life. You know why so many people are lonely? What are they really looking for? They're really looking for who they are. This connection to the universal life force or continuous or eternal life, and from a belief that we are never, never alone and that we will be supported, we will grow. Now, you talk about the Hanai Foundation and their belief that we must all be responsible to care and nurture all people, beginning with the children. I found that very, very beautiful. Can you tell us something about in Hawaii, the Hanu, and how they look upon adoption or how a child should be received into the world and cared for?
Hanai is it's a tradition in old Hawaii where the grandparents would often basically that was their form of adoption, where the grandparents would say to their children, "I would like to raise this child as my own." And it was a way of passing down the culture and the traditions and language directly to the young children, because there was no written language in Hawaii. But it was all about love and allowing. It was all about honoring, and it turned on it tuned into like a beautiful aspect of the human condition to me. And so that's why I started my foundation and named it Hanai, because adoption for me has been a struggle, and it's been a very difficult journey for me to really understand. So, all proceeds from my book go to my foundation, and my foundation is to support organizations and people that look to nurture others. And it's all about communication. It's all about connection. It's all about letting go of the separation that I felt most of my life. So that's where I'm putting all my energy right now. And
And you're doing it beautifully. And I want to say, in regard to what you're saying here, in my book, I wrote it in another way. And I wrote, in one way or another, all interactions revolve around being able to extend past our fears and the fear of losing love so we can be more loving, regardless of how the other person responds. The major reason a soul welcomes a physical life is to experience the giving and receiving of love. The giving of love may not necessarily include grand gestures. Rather, it is communicated through glances, words, music, undivided attention and concern, and the time invested in others. While this applies to romantic love, it applies to all forms of attachment as well. And I think you have learned to love on a greater level because of your experiences, all of them, living in Hawaii, having given up a child for adoption, having three other children, having the opportunity to reconnect again. And even if it is not the way we think it should be, it is still the way it must be for us to continue to grow and evolve. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. And what I really found, like you said at the very beginning, very generously, how, you know, I really believed that as a young child that I was doing the best I knew how to for my child, you know.
But that came from love
It
of
did.
not of
It
yourself,
did.
but for another. I want to
Yes.
thank you, Kimberly Smythe, for sharing your beautifully expressive, heartfelt, and authentic story of an early event that many other women have gone through silently and often with great sorrow or pain, in an effort to help others gain greater insights into the cultural, psychological, and emotional factors that surround the need to give a child up for adoption. To purchase this wonderfully written book, please go to lettinggoagain.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have sought to understand the great capacity we have for love and healing, no matter what others or our society deems to be practical or acceptable for everyone to adhere to. As unique soul beings who have our own personal soul journey and experiences to flow through in our continuing dance of life and love through the many relationships which may last for a lifetime or lifetimes beyond this physical world. Each experience offers us opportunities for expanding our awareness of the highest universal values of love, compassion, humility, hope, joy, happiness, and acceptance, and for surrendering to all events through which our personal growth is defined. Resilience and trying our best is what we can take away with us, no matter how heartbreaking the results of any event are. Kimberly found a way for her spirit to express its creative force and wrote this. When I moved away from the window, I took up my pen and wrote about how I couldn't wait for my life to start, not knowing, of course, how drastically a life can spiral out of control. As if taking a cue from the sudden changes outside, I declared my impatience with the process of growing up, certain that my future would be more enchanting than an intermediate school had been. I was tired of being a kid and having no say about my life. I wanted to hurry and grow up to get to the part of my life where it got messy and entirely important. I do believe that was my last entry. I'm not sure what happened to that journal. I guess I simply threw it away. I would not return to writing journals or entries in a journal until 4 years later, when those familiar themes of separation and loneliness returned to haunt me once again as a resident at a home for unwed mothers. Kimberly and I would have you remember the past is but a doorway to our future, and we are loved even though we may at times not love ourselves or understand why certain events are happening. There is a Shakespearean quote that says, "There are reasons for everything under heaven and earth," and seeing life as a journey of expansion and learning, we can find great joy that comes from the sorrow that helps us know we are human. And anything is possible when we finally realize our enormous inner potential for love and self-growth. As Kimberly said, we can only do our best and hope that forgiveness brings solace to us and those we love. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about the universal laws of energy, spiritual communication, healing, and how to manifest and create a prosperous life. Listen to authors share a scientific and spiritual approach to understanding self and the human condition. Also, you may go to webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com to hear new and archived shows. Thank you.